We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The McNeil and Parkin Show.
Let me ask you something. When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Afternoons on The Score.
Dennis hadn't accepted the role that Scotty wasn't going to be around, and we needed you to be more accountable. I need to count on you. So around that time, we had a game, and he gets kicked out for some. And I'm livid because he gets kicked out of the game and leaves me out there by myself because Scotty's not playing. And Dennis knew he knew he screwed up. I hear someone knocking on my door, the hotel. Now, Dennis never comes in my room. And he comes and says, man, you got an extra cigar.
I went to Michael Jordan's room, asked for a cigar, but I think that he knew the fact that, you know, that I think that's probably his way of me showing him that, you know, man, my bad.
He didn't say apology. He didn't say anything. But by him coming to my room, it was his way of saying, look, man, I f***ed up. And from that point on, Dennis was straight as an arrow. And we started to win.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
Some of the most compelling stuff to date in The Last Dance from episode 3 last night. Michael Jordan and Dennis Rodman on their unlikely pairing, given their history when Rodman was on the Pistons and Rodman's demeanor, frankly, and behavior compared to Michael Jordan's outward demeanor and behavior. When that happened, Mac, you're working at The Score, right? Rodman becomes a Bull. Do you remember how you felt about the story at the time?
I didn't love it. I thought he was a dirty basketball player. I didn't like the way the Pistons played. I respected some of their skills, and I respected a commitment to defense, but smacking guys in the face is not playing good defensive basketball, and we saw a lot of that in all of those highlights from the 89-90 series, the 90-91 series last night. No, I didn't do somersaults over the Rodman trade, and I know a lot of others who didn't. Dennis Rodman was the Antichrist. He was a Piston. They were all that to a Bulls fan who saw them in 88 and again in 89 and 90 when they won their second straight NBA championship.
Straight up bitches.
Yeah, straight up bitches is what they were.
God, that was such a great line from Horace. The grudge is real. They've held on to it for all of these years.
Yeah. By the way, Danny, next time you feel, you know, if you ever feel like you need to apologize to me for something or you've wronged me, just ask me for some smoke, and I'll know that you're feeling some sort of sense that you need to have an act of contrition. That's an interesting way to apologize, isn't it? You got an extra cigar?
Yeah. Right. It was.
That was bizarre. I'm like, what?
Yeah, and then Jordan apparently knew exactly what he meant because
I don't, you know, get that. Okay.
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of things you don't get about Rodman, right? Because one, there's an expression like you don't want this smoke, which would be like you don't want me to fight you. But in that case, he's like, hey, let me come over and have one of your very expensive cigars, and you know, it's kind of like a mea culpa, like, oh, I made a mistake. I thought it was interesting, like the unlikeliness of the pairing. And how to hear those guys all talk about Dennis, there was an understanding, even if they didn't like in the moment the preferential treatment, they had a respect for a couple of things. They had a respect for his ability on the basketball floor, first and foremost, right? Mm-hmm. He made them better. He made them tougher. He made them better defensively, and he did the grunt work that Michael and Scotty were not required to do, so he kept them cleaner, like Jordan did, or like Oakley did for Jordan earlier on. But then also, they talked about his work ethic. Like, yeah, he would burn out, and he would burn fast, but he'd be in the weight room after games. He would be on the elliptical before and after practice because he just, like, he never tired, and he would study opponents, and he was a savant when it came to rebounding. Like, he was a wild child because of the pressures that were around it, but as an actual basketball player, he had a very high basketball IQ.
Had his talents not been as high level as they were, I don't think Jackson, Jordan, and the rest of them would have put up with some of the antics and granted him a hall pass to leave in the middle of a season to go vacation and burn some steam, really let some steam off in Vegas. That's kind of absurd when you think about it, but I give Phil a little bit of credit with a team that is that good and a leading three players who are that good. If your guy, one of those guys, is so flaky, and Rodman was, that you feel it will rejuvenate him by giving him a couple of days off, as counterintuitive as that seems from an athlete standpoint, I understand it, and I don't have a problem with Phil Jackson having done that. Some of the guys felt differently, but Jackson, down the stretch of that 98 season, was putting up with way too much. Yes, you're right. They respected him for the weight room ethic, and they respected him for as hard as he played when he was on the floor, a rebounding machine and an intense defender, one of the best defenders of his era. But he was missing a lot of practices second half of 98. He was drinking way too much, and he had become a caricature of himself. And I often have wondered, had they kept it together for one more season and brought all of them back, if Dennis Rodman could have held up one more year with everything that went with being a world champion Chicago Bull, because he fell in love with being Dennis Rodman.
Yes, he did. And it was obviously different, and they'll get to it, I'm sure, later on in the documentary, but he skipped a practice during the finals in 98 to go to a wrestling match.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. He was the 90s. He Carmen Electra and Madonna and, you know, individualism and NWO and the whole thing. Like, he was a celebrity. But it's what you say is right, but there's a lot of things that you could apply that to a lot of different lines of work, right? Like, if you are the number one guy on your sales team, sales meetings at 9 a.m., maybe you can roll in at 9:15.
Different rules for different fools. It's not right, but it's the way of the world.
Correct. And so, while Jordan resented it on some level, hey, I'm carrying this team, I deserve a vacation, Phil knew that if there was a basketball game to be played, Michael Jordan was going to be there engaged and playing at 110% all the time.
Yes.
He didn't know that with Dennis Rodman, and that's what made Phil the perfect coach for those teams. Managing the ego, not flipping out on Scottie Pippen for scheduling the surgery at a selfish time. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Convincing Jordan to to buy into the triangle offense. Letting Dennis Rodman go to Vegas. A lot of coaches would have gotten all up in their egos and said, you know, no to any of that. Like, any,
you know,
one of those
everybody has an
things.
Opportunity to touch the ball, but I didn't want Bill Cartwright to have the ball with 5 seconds
Jackson
left.
Dumps into Cartwright. Shoots over Rollins. Nope.
That's not an equal opportunity offense. That's bull.
Bill Cartwright handling the ball with 5 seconds left. Oh yeah, MJ was as honest as he could be on that, and that was the onset that led to Phil Jackson, his getting his arms, or Will Perdue's fingers, around Tex Winter and the triangle winners and the triangle offense, where Doug Collins didn't want to run it. But, man, you think about what Jordan endured that final year, and he's getting older already and probably should be going backwards in minutes. And he's got to play the first several months of the season without Pippen, and he's got Rodman flaking out all the while. And he managed to keep it together, and they had a really respectable second half of the season and won their sixth title in 8 years. It's pretty incredible.
What do you mean? Vacation. He says he needs a vacation. He needs some time off to let loose.
God, partying in Vegas with Rodman would have been an awesome thing to say that you did in the 90s.
Yeah, I was, I had not yet retired in 97, 98.
Right.
I could have done Dawn Patrol with Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, yeah, you could have kept up in a big way.
If anybody needs a vacation, I need a vacation.
That's right. He's so right about that.
So good. And there was a little bit of a, I don't know if it was a mistake, but selective editing last night in the documentary. Jordan got Rodman out of his apartment room in the northern suburbs. He did not go to Vegas and drag him out of that hotel room. Like when Carmen Electra said that she was hiding behind the couch with the covers over, that was in Chicago. Like Jordan did not fly mid-season to Vegas. Like, could you imagine, like, hey, Dennis Rodman hasn't come back. Who are we going to send to Vegas to go get Dennis Rodman? Oh, I don't know. Michael Jordan. That's not what it was. It was his apartment that was like a mile away from the Birdo Center. Hey, let's send Michael over there because Dennis will actually answer the door if it's Michael Jordan. So I felt like a little misleading in the documentary. I don't even think it was intentional, but Jordan got him out of a Chicago apartment, not out of a Vegas hotel room.
Yeah, I have come to my first big criticism of the documentary. Do you want to keep going on Rodman, or can I flip it here?
Go ahead. We'll be trust
flip
me.
You
I'll bring it back to Rodman eventually.
Okay, we can bring it because I got more on Rodman too. But as I complained about with the 30 for 30 doc on the Bears of the mid to late 80s, the Super Bowl Bears of 1986, there were omissions. There was a terrible omission, and it's a difficult topic, and there's a way to handle it, but they're as vague as they were about the Doug Collins dismissal. They could have given more. They could have at least given you a reason to believe there was more than just basketball that was part of the transition between Doug Collins and Phil Jackson. Nobody in the organization was saying anything publicly. A lot of people, Bulls fans were furious, and I think they only won 48 games, Doug's, last year, but they made it to the finals of the Eastern Conference, and that wasn't expected. They kept winning playoff series and get to the finals of the conference, and Doug is let go. And we're led to believe on the documentary's part, by the documentary, that it was all over the triangle offense. There was more to it than that. And everybody who was around it at the time knew it. And it's not something that you can give many specifics on without getting yourself in trouble. But it is safe to say that the Bulls had a lifestyle problem with Doug Collins. And that's all that needed to be said. But it should have been stated in the documentary because that was part of his dismissal. And if nobody wants to go on the record to talk about it, at least you could say you went to the plate and you swung and missed. But that should have been noted, that there were things away from basketball that had something to do with the Bulls' decision to let Doug Collins go and hire Phil Jackson.
You know, that's interesting because first of all, you know that the director of this 30 for 30 is the same guy who did the Bears documentary.
I do.
Okay, yeah. So it's just he's done so many of these sports things, and it's just, you know, you talk about an omission here, and I know you had problems with the Bears one. It's the people who were there for all of it, chronicling all of it, the Sam Smiths of the world, they'll always know more, and all of the context and the details and the backstory and the full scope of every factor that went into every decision that could be displayed in a documentary, even if it is 10 hours, just because it was years, right? I mean, they're spanning decades with this thing. They're talking about Jordan being drafted, then they're doing backstories on guys going back to the 70s and late 60s. And they found Phil Jackson footage from when he coached in Puerto Rico and charged at a ref. Like, they are telling this story from a ton of angles, but it still isn't every angle possible. So I don't know if, like what you're saying is obviously true, and I'd love to know more about it off the air. I guess it's just when these guys are doing something like this, to get everything in seems like an impossible task and just an unreasonable ask for them because how could you?
Well,
how could you? There's a limited amount of time.
I'm talking about 10 words.
Okay.
You know, just to cover your ass. There also were reports of lifestyle problems. That's all you got to say. That's all you got to say, and let people's imaginations wander. To Les Kraft.
Had it been reported? You said it had been reported?
No, it was widely rumored.
Oh, okay. Well, that might have been the journalistic threshold that he came
up with. Well, you got to ask. You got to ask. Yeah. I mean, it's 30 years ago. You got to ask everybody you put in front of a camera who was part of it. You got to ask anybody from the late 80s, early 90s Bulls, including the people atop the organization, for a comment on it.
Hey, Doug Collins is still there.
I know.
He was in the dock last night. I thought he had a good line. It was kind of the butt of the issue with
just a feeling.
Well, that was not a great line. That was a weird moment in the documentary.
I liked it because I've had Doug look at me like that and see every wrong thing I've ever done with those piercing coach eyes of his. Because he looked at the reporter like it's a feeling. He didn't want to go any further.
Yeah, what else do you want? I'm not giving you anything. It was just a feeling. No, when Jordan hit the shot and they're like, what was that play called? He was like,
that was get the ball, Michael. Everybody get the f*** out of the way.
That's honest.
Yeah, it is.
And that is a way, actually, that in many ways, where basketball hasn't changed. Like, they went to the triangle. They've done a ton of things, right? Analytics and all that. Still, at the end of games, down one, need a shot, tie game, need a shot. It is very often, hey, give the ball to James Harden and get the F out of the way.
Yeah, just don't screw this up. Just don't get in the way of what we got here. That makes sense.
Yeah, so that was a part of it last night that I very much enjoyed. And I will say also, like, the idea of Rodman as a good or a bad teammate, just because that was kind of the overall thing. If it was binary, if you had to choose, the answer is good, right? Because the results spoke for themselves.
It's both. I think with most people, it's a mixed bag. With him, it certainly was. And, I've already received a few texts from listeners, pot calling the kettle black. I say the same about myself as a teammate, but we're talking about Dennis Rodman. There were times and he was a good teammate, and there are times he's a terrible teammate. You're not going to practice, not good teammate.
Correct. Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's – was that what you were talking about earlier when you said you had to do some introspection on yourself and how it made you feel, the parallels with you and Rodman? Is that what you were alluding to earlier?
This was something way worse than that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were going to be like, man, the super talented guy with some titles and pelts on the wall, some attendance issues.
No,
you know,
what do you mean?
A vacation. He says he needs a vacation. He needs some time off to let loose.
No.
Jordan, Rodman going to Vegas, is Mac going to cottage?
If anybody needs a vacation, I need a vacation.
Exactly.
That's Tanny.
Yeah, no doubt. But 90 seconds before Ron Coomer tells us that'll do it, I'll get to my other issue with my
I have to wait that long. Okay,
yeah,
549.
Yeah, 549-ish, maybe 548 if I'm feeling chippy.
Wow. Okay. Got it. It's that dark. So no room for me to follow up. Okay. I appreciate that very, very much. What was your favorite?
That'll do it.
What was your favorite line last night? If you had to pick one.
My favorite, Tanny just played the bite where Jordan was upset about an offense that would get funneled through Bill Cartwright on occasion. I also loved Ron Harper talking about Lenny Wilkins assigning Craig Helo to Jordan in the 88 series against Cleveland. That was good. Yeah, I was a longtime Ron Harper guy. We went to college simultaneously, and I covered him in college, and I always rooted for him, whether he was a Cav or a Bull, wherever he wound up. And when he expressed his disdain for his head coach for not getting a chance to guard Jordan, and little Craig Helo got the assignment, and the Cavs.
Everybody knew where the ball was going to go.
You know, they had Craig Helo on me at the time, which, in all honesty, was a mistake, because the guy that played me better was Ron Harper.
We up by one. I said, Coach, I got MJ. I got MJ. So the coach tells me, I'm going to put Helo on MJ. And I'm like, Yeah, okay. Whatever.
That was the best line by far.
Yeah, it's good.
And Burnsy made the point today, Elo's defense actually was fine. They almost denied Michael the ball. He had to double pump on the shot. He took
off
two dribbles.
Off balance when he let it go. Yeah, falling to his left. Yeah.
But I just, the competitive athlete, like I can hold some grudges. Mac, I know you can hold some grudges. Mm-hmm. But that's Ron Harper. What do you think? He's interviewed in 2018, 2019 for that doc?
Probably, yeah.
Talking about a shot from 1989. He ends up being Jordan's teammate and winning championships because of Jordan.
Right.
And 30 years later, right. He's still pissed about not getting the assignment to guard Michael Jordan in the first round of the NBA playoffs. It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, what is, you know, at some point you'll have to spend some time thinking about your longest standing grudge, because we all got them, and it doesn't make much sense to have them after all these years. For you know, it can be very unhealthy if we spend a lot of time thinking about it. You know, somebody once said the best revenge is to live well, and
right.
I try to adhere to that maxim, but I have varying degrees of success. When something is very important to you and someone stands in your way and you don't agree with the methods with which they operated, sometimes even many years after the fact, it's hard to get past it.
Yeah, it was Scabs. That's what I said off the top of this documentary. That's what it was. Like you know, you can get over something and it can just turns into a scar, but the scar doesn't leave you. Like you still feel it bad. And then if you pick at it, you know, it's just this thing. It's like, ugh, Ron Harper. He probably doesn't think every single day that he should have been the guy to guard Jordan in the shot, but whenever he sees that highlight, which is fairly often if you live in and around the basketball, you're like, damn, I should have been guarding him.
Yeah.
We would have advanced.
Yeah.
You know, I can't imagine it's like the last thing that Ron Harper thinks about when his head hits the pillow. That would be very unhealthy.
Not. Yeah, I sure hope not. He has come a long way as a speaker. When he was in college, he was not only bashful.
What just happened to Mac? He's in an aquarium all of a sudden.
What do you mean?
You're like in a submarine.
Does it sound bad all of a sudden?
I think that's on your end, Danny.
Okay. Oh, is it really?
Yeah, we didn't hear anything, yeah.
Okay. Oh.
Because
okay,
I do
my
not
bad.
Have an aquarium up on the anywhere in the house, actually. But
what
I
about can, a boy aquarium?
No, I miss my boy aquarium. I want a boy aquarium. When can I get my boy aquarium back? It'll be a while.
Yeah, maybe June.
No, but Ron was a terrible, terrible stutterer. He could his college coach, Jerry Pearson, I think, at Miami, would have to hold his hand to get him through post-game news conferences. The first time cameras started focusing on Ron Harper, and I had something to do with it, getting highlights to ESPN as an aggressive college kid looking for $20 for a piece of tape here and there. He was terribly shy, and he could not speak. He could not put a sentence together. He was that uptight about it.
Well, it's good to see people overcome that, right? We had
yes,
Bill-
it is.
Bill Walton on, he talked about overcoming a stutter. Bill Cartwright, obviously he had the issues with his throat and his, you know, the ability to project. He sounded very strong last night in the documentary, so a lot of stories like that across the way. We got draft analysis with Andy Benoit coming up at 3:40 from Sports Illustrated. Dan Patrick, always love catching up with him and getting his version of 90s Bulls stories. That's at 4 o'clock. We're McNeil and Parker.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's on the score.
Welcome, sports fans. This is the Chicago Sports Casino. Rory G. Staples wins again. Well, we know why he wins. He got kids.
That's right.
The Chicago Sports Casino on the Bulls team plane. I could have done an entire episode just on the gambling. They didn't give that much to us, but just a little glimpse made me happy. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including healthcare professionals. Thank you for helping keep us safe. I don't know if you feel the same way, Mac, but every time we get something like that, it's like, oh, Jordan snitching on Scott Burrell for being a womanizer and a drunk.
This man never gets sick. Dennis Rodman.
Oh, my. Hey,
Junior.
Hey, don't say that on camera, yo.
Yeah, oh, he never gets this. Single man, he thinks he can hang out all night.
Hey, hey, don't put that on tape. Don't put that on tape.
He committed to one girl.
Come on.
He's a lie. He's out every night.
Do not put this on tape right here.
Em. Why not?
That's messed
get
up.
Get some sleep, man.
I did get it. I got a whole lot of sleep.
Cigarette, you got a hangover this morning?
No, I am. My mom and dad are going to watch this, Em.
Yeah, mom and dad, he's an alcoholic.
Jordan is just a snitch, man. And like that, yeah. That's the stuff where if we had social media for those teams, I wonder if it all would have unraveled, because that was the type of stuff that could stay behind the scenes just long enough to be like rumor and innuendo. Like, oh, Jordan was in Atlantic City, or oh, Rodman was in Vegas, but you didn't really know.
I think those guys didn't mind it for the most part. And once Rodman came on board, he was always going to be the one garnering. And had there been Twitter in 97 and 98, Rodman would have dominated that, and that probably would have been just as fun, just as well for Jordan and Pippen. They wouldn't have cared. They didn't mind him getting all the attention for being such a colossal goof.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Rodman definitely put it over the edge. And he was covered like TMZ and tabloid fodder and all of that, and clearly there were tabloids and rumors around all of it. It just, you wonder if they seem to at times be on the brink of collapsing from the pressure, right? And that's what the documentary is showing, some of that.
Yep.
You wonder if instead of, oh man, Rodman's gone for a few days, if the video of him in Vegas circulating and being on SportsCenter 24 hours a day, mm-hmm. like if the images going with it at the time, if that would have changed anything. If Jordan at the golf course or at the blackjack table would have been photographed and videoed when they've got a playoff game later on that night, like how would that have changed any of the narrative around those teams?
Those are good questions, certainly things to ponder, because you're right. I mean, the paparazzi just loved Dennis Rodman. There was nothing he could do that they didn't find to be fascinating. And 4 o'clock, look forward to talking to Dan Patrick about some of that stuff we saw along the way, Seattle and Salt Lake City in back-to-back years, because it was a carnival. And that's the cool thing about the documentary. It takes you back to that time when the Bulls were a carnival, and it was cool to be a Bull or a Bulls fan. And not that I, was a Bulls fan necessarily, but just watching all the hysteria. It's a lot of fun to relive some of this stuff. And I had some negative energy resurrected last night about the Pistons, but I got over it quickly. And the Bulls got their revenge. They lived well, and they got that dragon slayed and went on and won 6 titles in 8 years. So
straight up bitches.
Yep, bitches.
I can't. Was it just because you felt like you had to choose between the Hawks and the Bulls, or because you were so counterculture? Like, how did you avoid being a Bulls fan? Were you doing it out of defiance? It feels like you were.
No, I just, you know, I don't love the game as much as I do four or five other games, is all. That's all. I was delighted for the city. Civic pride was never at a better point in my life than it was during those 8 years. It was great for everybody. It was great for bar and restaurant owners. It was great for vendors. It was an event for, you know, the 2.5 months of the playoffs every year for a decade. And the expectation regularly was they're going to win the championship. I just didn't. I just am not an over the top NBA enthusiast, is all. But I was delighted as hell for everybody who was. I like seeing happy people around me.
Sure, that makes sense. That makes sense. It crossed over, obviously, beyond just normal NBA or normal basketball. So I would think it would be very hard to avoid getting swept up in it all when everybody and anyone, like, they were showing the teaser for next week's episode, and one of it is, it seems like it's just going to be like the pop culture episode of all of the celebrities and the people who wanted to be around the Bulls, and it just seemed like it was everything, right? It crossed over from Oprah and Jerry Springer and the nightly news and presidents and all sorts of stuff. So I just would have thought it would be very, very difficult not to get swept up in it. But the NFL draft, the Bears actually might have gotten two day one starters. We'll see if the lead draft analyst for Sports Illustrated, Andy Benoy, thinks they did. That's coming up, and then Dan Patrick at 4 on the score.
Let's talk about the draft.
We're talking about the draft ahead of Dan Patrick joining us for 90s Bulls stories in 20 minutes now with lead draft analyst over at Sports Illustrated, Andy Benoy, kind enough to join us on the McNeil and Parkin Show by way of the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Andy, it certainly was a unique draft, and thank you very much for the time. How do you think the NFL did overall in pulling it off?
Well, I thought they did a tremendous job. It was a lot of fun. It was a different type of draft than usual. I give them an A+ on that. Difficult circumstances, and everyone embraced it. What was cool is how many coaches had cameras in their room and were welcoming the idea of what we're doing here this year. It was a lot of fun.
Andy, I see you give the Bears a B- for their efforts over the 3 days they were selecting players. What goes into giving a grade before a guy has ever even received his NFL playbook, and why a B- for the Bears?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I ask myself that every time I turn in a grade to my editors at SI. How did I come up with this one? Because it's such a superfluous endeavor, the draft grades, but everybody likes it. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of a jumping off point for football conversation. Never once have I banged the tables for any kind of draft grade, because we don't know what these guys are going to become. There's no way to know that. And even I went back and did draft grades for 5 years ago, like the 2014, 2015 draft. I did that project last year. Even in hindsight, you can't grade a draft because guys get hurt. Guys are in the wrong scheme for what they're trying to do. They're not as coached as well as others. It doesn't work this way, but at least it gives us something to talk about. Bears, you know, they only had two really consequential picks because of some of the trades they've made. So B-, I mean, that's what you give them. I like the Cole Kmet pick, and I like the Jalen Johnson pick, because both made sense for how this team wants to play. And that's kind of where we're at with things.
Some of the experts that we had on ahead of the draft said that it was just a bad tight end class, because we were asking about Cole Kmet because of his Notre Dame ties. He's from Arlington Heights, local kid. What do you think he projects to in terms of an NFL comp?
That's a good question. To me, and I don't study these draft prospects the way I do once they get in the league. Like, I'll see all of his snaps, Cole Kmet snaps, now that he's a Bear, but I did not see all of them with Notre Dame. To me, on the surface, he looks like a very traditional tight end. And I would imagine they see him as a three-down tight end, because Jimmy Graham's the top of the depth chart, and Jimmy Graham at this point in his career probably plays 25, 30 snaps a game, mostly passing situations. So Kmet, off the top of my head, I mean, a guy like, I don't know if he's a more athletic Kyle Rudolph, perhaps. I'd have to look closer at the details of what he does and look at his film closer. But we know this. The Bears almost certainly believe he's a three-down tight end, and that's pretty important, because what's standing out now, and I'm sure you guys have talked about a little bit, tight end's obviously a position of priority for Matt Nagy and how he wants to play on offense.
Yes, and we've made they've made themselves a punchline for having 9 or 10 guys around. Now it's back to 9. You wrote Demetrius Harris is going to be a big part of it, and you expect Matt Nagy to employ some 3 tight end sets. We don't know a lot about Demetrius Harris because he played college basketball at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and didn't really establish himself as too much of a notable chief. What should we look forward to regarding his game?
Well, what I liked about Harris, he was not a notable chief on paper, and look, they had a lot of guys to feed the ball to, including the guy ahead of him on the depth chart and Travis Kelce. When you put on the film, what really stood out with Harris when he was a chief is the formational flexibility he gave them. In other words, he can line up anywhere in the formation, and that was really important because when you have a number two who can do that and truly do it to where you can throw them the ball from any alignment, that gave them unlimited flexibility for how they're using all their other guys. And they had a great one in Travis Kelce. So Harris is unique because he's depth at the tight end position and he's flexible depth. Usually the flexible players are starters. What Matt Nagy, I imagine, will do this year, just because they have so many tight ends, and they're not going to have 9 when the season starts. They'll have 4 on the roster, maybe 5. It's going to be Harris. It's going to be Graham. It's going to be Komet. And then they'll pick between probably Broniker and Shaheen and Holtz. What they're going to likely do is put 2 tight ends in the game at times and try to get defenses into their base personnel where they're having to defend the run. You get more predictable coverages when you do that. But when you go to 3 tight ends, you get super predictable coverages because what happens is defenses only see 3 tight end sets maybe once or twice a game on average. It doesn't happen very much. So they don't have a lot of answers for it because they're not going to spend practice time dealing with it. So whatever you see from a defense on film when you go to 3 tight ends, you're very confident you're going to get that in the game from them. So you can design some plays that really exploit what you're expecting from that defense. Kyle Shanahan did this with the Falcons a few years ago. He absolutely killed people, especially early in the season, with 3 tight end sets. They threw the ball deep and downfield out of 3 tight ends. And when you've got Cole Kmet, Jimmy Graham, and Demetrius Harris, you've got 3 true bona fide pass-catching tight ends in the game, 2 of whom you feel okay about blocking as well. So your whole offense is available to you, and you get the defense in a highly predictable look. And that makes life easy on Mitchell Trubisky or Nick Foles.
What was the thing when you look at the Bears offense compared to what they're trying to be, the Eagles and eventually the Chiefs offense, where you could say to Bears fans, if you had productive tight end play like those 2 teams do, this is what it unlocks for the rest of the offense?
That's a great question. I think it starts with what it unlocks is what you do on third down, because the teams that are really successful in this league on third down and they're incorporating their tight end as part of that equation, their tight end splits out wide, or really it's not wide. He splits out a few yards outside the tackle, lines up by himself, and you put all 3 of your wide receivers on the other side of the field together. The Chiefs do this on the majority of their third down snaps with Travis Kelce, and he's unique because he's such a good receiver. But when you go to those unbalanced sets, you very often, almost always, you get a man zone indicator from the defense. So the quarterback, just by how the defense lines up when your tight end's by himself on one side, the quarterback already knows if it's going to be man or zone coverage. And that right there is a ton of information. And then what Matt Nagy does so well is he puts a 4th receiver, a 4th eligible receiver, over on the 3 receiver side. So they flood the field with 4 guys, and that makes it nearly impossible to play zone coverage, matchup zone coverage, which is what the really good defenses play, your Baltimore Ravens-type defenses. The matchup zone coverage becomes even more vulnerable because you just can dictate where defenders go so well. So the ability to unbalance a formation is what these tight ends give you. They thought Trey Burton was going to be that guy. You can tell by the way they were using him. Burton was often lining up by himself early on. For a variety of reasons, mainly injuries with Burton, it never quite came to fruition. But they're going to do that with Jimmy Graham this year, and I would imagine they feel they can do it with Komet, putting that tight end by himself on the one side of the formation.
Andy, we met the Bears' second round pick last hour, Jalen Johnson, the cornerback out of Utah. Do you think it's a push to get him in the weight room and healed up and be in the starting lineup come September if there's football on time?
They're going to need to because they really don't have a proven number two corner. Maybe they're high on Kevin Tolliver. I mean, I know he's been on the field a little bit in the past couple of years. Kind of mixed results. Some teams have gone after him, which is what happens when a backup cornerback comes in. What we know is Chuck Pagano, in his heart of hearts, he likes to do two things. He likes to blitz. He likes to bring pressure. And when you blitz, you play man-to-man coverage behind it because you're trying to get the blitz to the quarterback, ball's out quickly. You want to have your defenders right up on their man to defend that ball. So you play man coverage, or he wants to play what you call quarters coverage. Each defensive back has one quarter of the field, and that's a zone coverage that basically plays out like man-to-man by the way the rules are set up. So what you need is a cover corner then. And they've got a good one in Kyle Fuller. They got rid of Prince Amukamara, and I would imagine some of that was financial, but Amukamara really doesn't fit that style of football. He's much better in a zone scheme where he can play to more safety help. So they needed a number two corner, and that's why they got Jalen Johnson. I'm sure they feel he can play one-on-one and cover a guy. And to answer your question, yeah, they need him on the field sooner than later because I'm not sure they have a second quality cover guy. Given that Buster Screen, you have to view him as strictly a slot corner and nickel.
Andy Benoit from Sports Illustrated, our guest for another couple of minutes. Then we'll talk to Dan Patrick at 4 o'clock for some 90s Bulls stories. Andy, who do you think the best team is in the NFC North?
I think it's the Green Bay Packers still. Top to bottom roster, it's the best roster. Detroit is better, much better than they were a year ago, and they were never as bad as their record suggested. But they've still got a ways to go. I think Minnesota's taking a step back this year. A lot of young guys on a team that really has only played veterans the last few years. And then the Bears, to me, I thought last year they were about a 7-9 type of roster. They're maybe up to 9-7 right now. But, you know, as good as things look with Chicago, they still got a quarterback controversy to figure out the front of the season. So Green Bay, to me, is they're not far and away the best in the NFC North, but they're clearly the best in the NFC North right now.
Who do you think's going to win the Bears quarterback battle?
That's a very good question. I think Trubisky will get a chance to win it. He'll probably have a short leash with that. And, oh, man, that's a hard one. I'm sure they want Trubisky to win it. It wouldn't surprise me if it's Nick Foles because one thing that's gone on with Chicago, it looks like a really expansive offense because Nagy does such a good job with his formationing and his pre-snap movement. Once the ball is snapped, they are not an overly complex passing game. It's a lot of rudimentary design still. And I imagine some of that is they're playing to Trubisky and trying to get him comfortable and trying to get a feel for him. At what point does a coach and a good offensive coach like Nagy, at what point does that coach throw up his hands and say, give me the veteran who at least, you know, he's not a great player, but we know he can do a lot of things. We know we can run a lot of our playbook with him. That could be pretty tempting if you're 2-2, 2-3, or if you're coming off of an average season like the Bears are right now.
Packers get to the NFC title game, get smoked by the 49ers, and draft a quarterback of the future Thursday night. More bizarre than the Eagles, because they didn't do it early, drafting an insurance policy for Carson Wentz. Would you call that the most bizarre turn of the draft, Green Bay, still?
I probably would. I'd certainly say it's the most unexpected. I didn't see that coming at all. To their credit, what they've done, they've clearly decided we're going to build for the long haul. We're going to take that Seahawks approach, that Patriots approach, and we're going to take our early round picks and make them developmental players. And none of their draft picks this year are likely to play meaningful roles in 2020. So it's not just the QB of the future. Running backs, they didn't get a wide receiver, but running backs, tight ends, linemen, they took the long view on this thing. That surprised me, but to their credit, they at least committed to that approach.
Andy Benoit from Sports Illustrated. Appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
That's Andy Benoit from Sports Illustrated. Speaking of Matt Nagy, Mac, did you see the wall in his home? His little draft setup. He had his little beautiful mind thing going on with all of his game designs and play sheets on the wall.
Yeah, how about that?
It's kind of odd.
Into the laboratory. Into the mind of Matt Nagy.
I agree with what Andy said about, and we know this, that I think that Matt Nagy has way more in his offensive arsenal and that he was held back by the quarterback spot. Like that he wants to do more. But
of course, yeah, he didn't come here to run the I formation.
Right, he'll let you know. But there's a contingent of Bears fans, I don't know how big it is, who believe that he sucks. That think we have seen that Matt Nagy, it's 2 years of bad offense, that Matt Nagy is not a good offensive football coach, and that it's a bunch of style over substance.
They lost some faith in him last year. I think for as much as anything for his lack of control of the sideline on occasions, at meaningful points in games, when there were too many plates spinning for him. I think he'll get better. At that, I hope he gets better. Smart guys do, and I don't think he's a dumb guy.
Yeah, he's not a dumb guy. I think that's why they got Foles. I think that Andy hit on it at the end. It was all right. At least give me a guy who can retain 80 plays for this week's game plan against the Vikings, and then I can put in 70 new plays for this week against the Lions if I want to. Because it's totally different game, scheme, everything. And I don't have to use the same stuff week in and week out and whittle it all down. And I think that's what happened with Trubisky. And as it went on, they got more and more predictable and easier to game plan with. And that's the exact opposite of what Matt Nagy wants to do. But I'm excited to talk to your friend Dan Patrick coming up here. How many years on the road did you see him with the Bulls?
We met in 93 in Phoenix, title number 3 for the Bulls. That was the first second time I went on the road. First time I bumped into Dan, and he's been a bud since. So Seattle, Salt Lake City a couple times. Salt Lake City is where he got my ex-wife for a night, but that's okay. You do things like that for your friends.
Yeah, I mean, his version was a little different than yours the last time he was on. So we can revisit if there is still animosity or tension in the room. I don't think that there is. But Dan Patrick on his thoughts on The Last Dance and some 90s Bulls stories coming up on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.